Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Receiving this message. We are Ken Jennings and John Roderick. We speak to you from our present, which we can only assume is your distant past, the turbulent time that was the early 21st century.
Fearing the great cataclysm that will surely befall our civilization, we began this monumental reference of strange and obscure human knowledge. These recordings represent our attempt to compile and preserve wonders and esoterica that would otherwise be lost.
So whether you're listening from an advanced civilization or have just reinvented the technology to decrypt our transmissions, this is our legacy to you.
This is our time capsule. This is the Omnibus.
Accessed entry 075.2P0308, certificate number 24524. As slow as possible.
Yeah, this whole entry is going to be about my kids getting out of the car.
Oh, I thought it was going to be about my laconic style. Did I ever tell you the story about the time?
It's about your storytelling style. Do you have the problem with your kid with Marla sitting in the car for ages after you pull up to wherever, or is she off like a shot?
No, so I had to actually make an issue about it, because we would pull into a thing and we would all get out of the car and she's just sitting in there.
Exactly the same.
And I was like, who do you think is running this show? Like, get out.
I'm not clear what they're waiting for. What do they think is going to happen? The engine's off. Show's over.
They're happy to be in their little place, and they don't want... They're afraid of change.
It's kind of pure that they're just happy where they are and not immediately bouncing to the next thing. What do you think about the pace of modern life? Too fast? Too slow? About right? Do you feel like it's about right for you?
The thing is, when I pull into a place and get out of the car, I would like to continue on my path and not stand there drumming my fingers on the top of the car while she, I don't know what, just stares into space, finishes her book.
But if you were one of these very present people who's just in the moment.
Yeah, I try to
be. Then it doesn't matter. You're the same number of minutes are allotted to you no matter what. So why not just drum your fingers on the roof of the car, enjoy the sun on the asphalt.
You know, I'm trying to be aloha and just be where I am and be like a turtle, let the waves carry me in and then the waves carry me out. But we're in the parking lot of a restaurant and it's time to go inside.
You're being too much like a turtle, Marlo.
I think what it is that I'm all right with the ocean moving me in and out, but I do not want to be at the beck and call of an 8-year-old.
It's just, oh, I see. It's a power thing.
A little bit.
Like if you were with the president.
And he was sitting in the car.
If you were giving Tom Hanks a ride to Black Bear Diner,
and he was still in his car seat reading "No More Diapers for Ducky,"
you wouldn't say, "Tom,
no,
we're at the restaurant."
I mean, I might do like a through the window, might do like a shrug, like
were you going to get out? You've got two Oscars.
Should I get back in?
Well, you're aware of this modern thinking that. And probably even without reading a book, you would be aware that life is moving faster than it used to be. And maybe there's something that seems breakneck or out of control or unfortunate about the current pace of life.
I mean, I'm familiar with it, but it also felt like a thing that in the 80s we talked about a lot. Like, we can't sustain this breakneck pace. And so we've introduced a lot of yoga and a lot of self-care into the way we talk about life. But now we have this thing where we're all carrying around our work with us all day. And you're working 20 hours a day because you're never away from email.
Yeah, I remember reading that. You remember that James Gleick book, Faster, where he talked about how, you know, basically modernity kind of invented time and the idea that you could waste it and that there was free time, but you had to, even though it was free, you had to use it, and waiting for things was problematic, you know, just this whole weird relationship we have with urgency now. And I remember thinking, I read the book long after it came out, and I thought, this guy's writing this before we have cell phones. Right. Cell phones kind of fixed all this, you know? We don't wait for anything now, you know? The second something doesn't go the pace we want, we can just beam our attention into our rectangle. So that's right. Problem solved.
Go into your personal library.
If Marlo's not getting out of the car, let's see what's happening on Instagram.
I don't know if I've told you this story, but when I walked across Europe, I didn't have a watch, and it was before cell phones. And very quickly, I settled into a tempo dictated by the day, by the sun and dusk and dawn. And I got so I could tell what time of day it was.
You're a farmer.
You're basically a farmer,
with no crops or sustenance. No,
well, but I was farming life experience
and other people's crops.
That's right. I was living off the land.
You were living in haystacks.
But I woke up at dawn pretty much because I was sleeping outside, and I'd walk until it was too hot to walk, and I'd stop under a shady tree and eat some cherries and have a little water, and then walk through the afternoon until it was dusk.
It seems like a recipe for diarrhea. Just
cherries
at midday.
If all you're living on is cherries, you're going to have some stomach cramps.
Good to know.
But outside of Budapest, I met a guy there in the city who said that he wanted to join me on my walk. And I was, I don't know, pretty suspicious. Like, I'm walking at my own pace. I don't really need a friend. And he was like, come on, I'll just walk with you for a couple of days.
Was he Hungarian?
He was Hungarian. And he said, you know, I'll walk with you a couple of days. We'll get to a town that's got a train station, and I'll take the train back home. And I said, okay, sure. So we start walking. Well, he has a watch. And immediately he's looking at the mileage signs. He's timing us. And he's doing it reflexively. I would have been doing it if I had a watch.
Sure.
It's just like, oh, it took us an hour to go like only 4 kilometers. Like, we need to pick up the pace.
You now have a road trip dad who's like, we're not making good time.
Right.
We're not going to make Butte.
Faster than I am. Like, he's like, we got to pick up the pace. And I hated him. I hated him. And more than that, I hated his watch because it reintroduced this sort of artificial urgency, this thing that we were behind.
Thinking that urgency and importance are the same, yeah. Right? Did you murder him? Is he in a haystack somewhere to this day?
No, but after, we did walk a couple of days. And then we slept in a field the first night, and he snored like a sawmill. And I was like, you are not making a good case for yourself as a travel partner for me. But he did. We got someplace, and he got on a train. We walked for 2.5 days or something. He got on a train, and he was home in an hour. And it was just, that just infuriated me even more.
If snoring is good manners, we don't know how your respiratory systems work, listeners, but if snoring is good manners in your time, it's really upsetting in a traveling companion in our time.
It's true. Futurelings could be all like future octopuses who have like...
They're just bubbling and burbling all night. And if it gets quiet, they wake up. Like sometimes you wake up when the fridge goes off or whatever. Hmm. Yeah, but you're right. There has been, I have the same problem... Like, I've worn a watch my entire life, and I get a little antsy when I don't have one. Like, you go into some timeless void, not like a black hole, but like a casino, which is worse than a black hole.
Or airports do this, too. You would think there'd be clocks everywhere in an airport. It's the one thing you want to know.
The only important thing, and yet you're sitting somewhere eating your Wendy's, and...
You're like, what time is it?
I feel like sometimes even the departure boards that list all the times, constantly changing, do not have the current time. That's supposed to be your problem.
I don't know what that is. I understand why they don't have them in casinos, because they don't want you to know what time it is.
They want you to stay. Airports want you to leave.
Yeah.
If you stay at an airport, the airport's broken. They can't handle all those people just flying in and then not leaving. It's a nightmare. But you're right. There's been kind of a movement back toward slowness, you know, something we never needed at any other point in history, because...
Is it really a movement? Do they have like a flag?
Yeah. Well, they're designing it, but it's taken quite a while.
Oh, sure, of course.
There's a committee that's going to be designing a flag, but they can't decide who's on the committee. Well, you know, there's like, for example, a slow food movement.
Oh, sure.
Like the idea that, you know, the convenience, the mid-century conveniences of things like getting your burger faster or getting your whatever delivered faster.
Yeah.
Like there's been a pushback just recently this week against Amazon delivery.
Oh.
Like we're seeing kind of the, you know, people are doing the math of what the carbon footprint and the labor costs and the, you know, the treatment of the employees that are involved in getting you a spatula in 12 hours.
Well, people didn't need to do the math on that. I remember the first time our good friend Merlin Mann told me that he ordered toilet paper delivered and the supermarket's three blocks from his house. And I said, that's insane. He was like, well, I was out of toilet paper and free delivery. I mean, you know, it doesn't take a genius to think or to come to the conclusion that that is a tremendous waste of resources.
My wife and I, a couple of weeks ago, did without a light bulb and one of our bedside lamps for over a week because each of us thought the other had ordered it on Amazon. And we were just thinking light bulbs were just going to appear on the porch. And why were they not appearing? But this is a new way of thinking, this kind of convenience-addicted lifestyle where things should just
Well, appear. It's actually an aristocratic way of thinking, right? You would snap your fingers and the light bulb would, or light bulbs would burn out and get magically changed and you wouldn't know how.
We're all the lord of the manor now.
That's right.
Amazon is our valet and McDonald's is our valet or our cook.
Right.
So you know, restaurants and chefs have, you know, been built around this idea that no, you're going to have to wait for your food and it'll be better because you'll savor it. Mm-hmm. There will be, we'll be able to achieve things in quality that you couldn't if the food actually came out when you were hungry.
Wait, which is the snobbiest, most hateful lifestyle? To be rich enough to sit around and wait or to be rich enough to have toilet paper delivered to your house?
Exactly.
I hate all these people.
Think of all the rich ladies doing their yoga or their kind of slow exercise. Whereas, you know, Ditch Digger is actually
thinking about that now. Yeah. all the rich ladies.
Think about the pants.
All the rich ladies.
And whereas if you're a Ditch Digger or something, you don't have the luxury words fast.
I need to slow down.
I need to build fewer ditches and just be more in the moment when I'm digging in the ditch.
You know, if you're an apple picker, you get paid by the bushel, not by the hour.
Right. If you're thinking like a Robert Frost character, I've had enough of apple picking now, you may not sleep anywhere tonight.
That's right. You need to pick as many apples as you can in the shortest amount of time.
But take one of these people who's addicted to slow food or slow exercise or whatever.
Take them out around the barn and shoot them?
Well, I wasn't going to do that first.
Right. No. And you're a foodie. You like slow food.
I like the idea that someone is taking greater care of things. I like the quality involved. But I think the idea that there's a certain virtue in waiting, I'm not super convinced. Like, just suggest to one of these people that they embrace the slow internet movement, for example. And you'll see how classist this whole thing is. What about music? What do you think about the tempo of music?
Slow music?
Well, tell me this. Like, how come when I see a band live, they do all the hits a little faster? That's the thing, right?
Yeah, well, when you play live, you naturally speed up just because you feel the energy of the room and you want to like, give them some zippy...
Can you tell you're doing it a little faster than the record?
Yeah, and there are plenty of songs where if it gets faster past a certain point, it's hard or impossible to play. Like our the Long Winter song, "Scared Straight," the bass line becomes very, very strenuous if the BPM goes past kind of and I'm on the guitar, I'm prepared to play it faster. But then the bass line is like, it's too much.
The bassist is your bottleneck?
Yeah, so he keeps the tempo down. But there are some bands that play slower live, but they're, you know, there's like slow bands.
And you said BPM like a DJ, but like would a good live musician kind of know, be able to sense? Would a drummer know, like, I'm playing at this many BPM and be within five or so?
It's what a great drummer can do. I mean, there are drummers that have a lot of expressiveness but aren't great at keeping time. And there are drummers that are great at keeping time, but are kind of metronomic and not really artistic. Mm. And then the best drummers are both really good at time and also
I feel like the second guy artistic. You could just replace with a drum machine.
Well, no. I mean, it's still if you have really good time, you can play something like Ringo Starr. Play something really simple, but because your time is so good, it becomes it's a matter of feel. And the feel is what makes music feel good. But like if you buy a looper or a drum machine,
yeah,
the bass setting is 120 beats per minute. That's kind of like the standard stock pop song tempo, 120 BPM. And you can ramp that up to techno level, or you can slow it way down to make it sound like low, you know, like get all
slow core. I was thinking about that, like, I think maybe a couple generations ago, the menace of popular music was often communicated with how fast and wild it was, mm-hmm. you know, like boogie woogie or Dixieland jazz, or, you know, maybe even ragtime. These were just faster than the popular songs of their parents' period. And that's what kind of made it seem edgy and dangerous, is that it's careening along into your ears. But actually, the more I thought about it, I realized that it's the slow music that's dangerous.
Well, that's the thing. Those are the taboo rhythms.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, they're not, maybe it's the syncopation and stuff too, but it seems like if you're a song is self-consciously slow, there might be a couple reasons. One is it might be drug related, right? It's supposed to, you know, certain kinds of psychedelic music are often very slow, maybe to suggest the time altering properties of certain substances.
It's like, really about making out.
Well, that's the other one. So you got drugs. You've got like Vanilla Fudge and these guys. You remember how Vanilla Fudge would do like Motown? They'd do like maybe I'm quite a bit older than you.
I can't believe that we're talking about Vanilla Fudge. But where did we go wrong in life?
Well, you know, without Vanilla Fudge, you don't get Deep Purple. You don't get Yes. Like, if, for those who don't know, if Vanilla Fudge has not, their memory has not lasted into the far future, they were the late 60s kind of acid rock band that would do covers of like Motown songs and other pop songs.
We are constantly trying to establish that we are not boomers. And yes, you are really chipping away.
I'm doing 10 minutes on Vanilla Fudge right here. But have you heard, like, so, you know, think of Diana Ross singing, you keep me hanging on. It's 120 probably, beats per minute or so. And have you heard the Vanilla Fudge version? Set me free, why don't you? And this is what they would do. You'd buy a Vanilla Fudge record, and it would be heavy covers at a third the speed, but with great heaviosity, and the mushrooms you're coming up on.
It's right there in the name.
Are starting to seem like a great decision.
Vanilla Fudge.
Right.
Right?
Exactly.
Like the Melvins. The name tells you what you're about to experience.
We're going to take black people's music, but we've got a very, very vanilla twist on it. It's going to be incredibly slow, and you
make
cannot
it
dance to it.
Super fudgy.
At all. But you mentioned the other thing slow music does, which is it's sexy. Right?
I went to see Bryan Ferry last night.
Oh, right. I saw the pictures.
And Bryan Ferry and Roxy Music's music has always kind of gone over my head, or maybe past me on the highway.
Below your feet.
Because it's not super melody based. It's really,
do you not tend to like a trancey, moody kind of a thing?
It feels like sex on cocaine to me, you know, which I know is a reference that's going to miss you on both counts. But
tell me about it.
But,
think about me not having sex, not on cocaine, and then just reverse it. And exactly.
But yeah, there's no there. It's meant to be played kind of as ambiance, but it's got vocals. It's not just like ambient music. But
yeah, I'm not going to stand you too much talking about Roxy music here.
You know what I mean, though? There are a lot of chord changes that are not what I would have done, right? Like when you're making a song and you're like, here's the chords, and now I'm got to find a chord to go to the chorus. And then you hit a chord and you go, no, not that one. And you try again. Roxy Music said, oh yeah, that one. Like it just feels like the chord changes are all in directions that I have a hard time mapping. But watching the audience and being in the room, I realized, oh, everybody in this audience lost their virginity to this music. Like it has it's spellcasting. You know,
yeah, the music doesn't even have chronology, really. In most songs, things come after other things.
Yeah.
And not so much in that kind of music, right? Like every second of that song kind of exists at once, and any chunk of it is...
It goes along.
Is representative.
Are there choruses? I guess. But it's not about that. It's about creating... It's about turning the lights down and putting your hands on one another, let's be honest.
Right. And that's where you get the whole kind of slow jams movement. Let's slow it down.
Now we're going to get into a slow dance. When you were at a school dance and the slow dance happened, did you move toward the dance floor or move away?
Oh, toward, but mostly because, you know, not less for groping than for like less skill required.
Oh, sure. You just
like, it's hard to dance badly to a slow jam, to Terrence Trent D'Arby or whatever I'm slow dancing to in this scenario.
Were there ever a scenario where like a proctor came over and separated you and your dancing partner?
I never actually saw that happen. There was not a whole lot of dirty dancing going on at my high school or junior high that I can remember.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
But that's what slow music is, right? It's Slow Love by Prince. Any song that's about slowness, Slow Love by Prince, It's So Much Better When We Take Our Time, up to Despacito. Mm. Like, really the idea is people are having sex slowly and we're invited to consider that. Which always worries me a little. Like, you don't want to have sex too slowly. What if somebody falls asleep?
I mean, it depends. There's a lot of... thinking about the great breadth of futurelings, I'm sure there are plenty that where the act of coitus takes a mere second, you know, like they connect the
ovipositors.
Yeah. They spray, their seed upon one another and then they immediately evaporate.
But there could also be some that have just centuries of foreplay.
Right.
Per spore.
Right. What about spore ants? Play? I mean, think about insects.
I never thought about insects, but I am now because they're all yearning for their ant wives.
That's right.
Of all the creatures in Middle Earth, the ants are the horniest.
Huh. I had never thought of it that way.
They're constantly just talking about their... Even one of them's even called Hornbeam, I think.
Yeah. There's not a ton of sex in Middle Earth, is there? It doesn't come up a lot.
No.
Samwise Gamgee has a little bit of sex there at the end.
Because he's got 9 kids.
Yeah.
He must have.
He's got that saucy wife.
The main problem is there's only 2 women in Middle Earth.
Uh-huh. There's Gladriel.
Somebody's going to wind up with Arwen. Oh, Gladriel's already married. Somebody's going to wind up with Arwen. Somebody's going to wind up with Eowyn. And then, really, everybody else just kind of has to defend a fort from a siege.
No, those hobbit babes are babes.
That's true. The hobbits, we imagine, have a lot of earthy, rosy-cheeked adventures.
I think they rut pretty heavily.
Is that why Frodo leaves?
Oh, maybe.
Like, they're always talking about how the hobbits love the comforts of home. Is Frodo just, like, ace? Is he asexual?
He's pretty beta.
Or is Frodo gay?
Well,
like Frodo doesn't feel comfortable and he's trying to find the elves who maybe experiment a little more.
He's on a quest. He's headed out to the West Coast.
What kind of ring is that you're holding, Frodo? Anyway, so I associate slow music with debauchery, but no composer has thought more about tempo, I'm going to assert right now.
Go ahead. I'm listening.
The 20th century avant-gardist John Cage.
Right.
What do you know about John Cage?
Just that there's no composer that thinks more about tempo than he does.
Is that the main thing you think about him?
Well, also he has a song that's just total silence.
Right, that's his thing. Right, 4 minutes and 33 seconds. If you were there at the first performance of that in 1952, you would have seen a man get up and walk to a piano, close the lid of the piano, and then just sit. And at different points during the silent 4 minutes and 30 seconds, open the lid and then reclose it to express that the movement has ended. So you can open the lid. Oh, new movement. Better close the lid again because I'm not going to play any key. It's a great piece. I mean, sometimes when my kids are practicing their instruments, I kind of wish they would spend a few hours working on 4:33.
This is not a pipe.
That's kind of the thing. It's conceptual. This is not music, or is it? He often said that it was inspired by visiting Harvard and seeing that they were all full of crappy intellectual ideas. No. Visiting Harvard and going into an anechoic chamber, like some perfectly silent chamber. And as he walks in, he realizes, oh, even silence is not silent.
Right.
Because he can still hear tones. And in his account of it, the technician says, oh yeah, if you hear a low tone and a high tone, one of them is your blood circulating in your veins and the other is neural activity in your nerves.
Whoa.
Like that's actually what you're hearing.
Excellent.
Now that there's nothing else to... So he's asking questions about, you know, what is silence? Does this count as music? You become hyper aware of other sounds in the hall.
Right.
How does it all play into Eastern ideas of, you know, the blank canvas with the single brush stroke and meditation and mindfulness and all this stuff. So, you know, he may not just be a charlatan doing gimmicks, but he has a ton of gimmicky music.
On the first Long Winters record, we got Scott McCoy, the great
young fresh fellow
front man and leader of the Minus Five, member of REM. He came in, we didn't really have anything for him to play. He just sat in a chair and we recorded him for a track, just sitting quietly in a chair. And then we mixed the sound of Scott McCoy into one of the tunes.
And when you listen to the two versions of the track, one with Scott McCoy, one without Scott McCoy.
Vibe for sure.
It was different.
For sure.
Would it have killed you guys to just let him do hand claps or?
Well, on the next record, he did some stuff. He laid some stuff down. We just needed that. I don't know. It was one of those things. It just needed that sauce.
Was it a record company thing where he wasn't allowed to pick up an instrument? I can sit in the chair, but.
No, it was a song that I had already played all the instruments on, and my performances were so impeccable that how could you improve upon them?
I feel like to this day, people will complain about John Cage's kind of Emperor Has No Clothes quality of his work, but it's not all summed up by that one white canvas of 433. He has a lot of other incredibly gimmicky pieces. He liked...
He's not just that one gimmick.
He has so many weird gimmicks. He liked to draw music out of randomness, like, throwing lots a la the I Ching,
right,
and, you know, letting those determine the notes and the tempo. Sometimes it would be star charts. He would take a chart of a constellation and put a staff on it and let where the stars fell determine what tones were played when. Odd instrumentation. He has a piece called Child of Tree in which he put contact microphones on plants and then played the plants. Amplified cactus, right, is the main instrument. He would sproing the cactus or rub a feather on the bristles, and it's, you know, it's wired like an electric guitar. So you would hear stuff. His famous piece Variations 7 is played by 10 telephones that are all open to different locations in New York City. The Times press room, a bustling restaurant, the Dog Pound, Merce Cunningham's famous dance studio, a friend's turtle terrarium, and they'd all be playing this at once, in addition to a blender, a juicer, a toaster, fans, radios, two Geiger counters. Basically, he invented the Flaming Lips.
Have you ever been to one of those Flaming Lips performances?
I have, you know, I've heard, I've never, was like the one where they have all the radios playing.
Yeah, right. A bunch of different cars in a parking garage and they all put a cassette tape in their cassette player and push play at the same time.
I have Zyrica, which is the one where there's four things going on four different CDs and you can play them all at once for some kind of gestalt experience. Mm-hmm. Have you been to see, every time I've seen the Flaming Lips, they were not doing that, but they were doing something else crazy.
Yeah, they were shooting confetti out of cannons, and he was in a giant
ball. Hamster ball rolling over the.
Did you ever see them do War Pigs? Have you seen them perform War Pigs?
What happens in War Pigs?
It's just a very good cover of War Pigs.
I like that gimmick.
Yeah.
What if instead of doing a bad cover,
it was just a really good cover? I mean, it's a tough song to cover, but they do a great job.
There's a lot of John Cage compositions that have that kind of a Wayne Coyne, let's play a bunch of radios at once. For example, Water Walk, which he actually wrote for an Italian quiz show. Not a lot of music's written for Italian quiz shows.
Well, Prezencola and Ensign and Cusel.
Right. This is the second best song that originated on Italian novelty TV. Water Walk is all sloshing and splashing. He has a bathtub. You know, the other instruments include a toy fish, a rubber ducky. There's a pressure cooker. He puts ice cubes in an electric mixer. And it's not all instrumentation. His famous Freeman Etudes are 17 violin etudes that he wrote to be impossible to play. It's supposed to just look really Baroque on the staff, notes out of control, eight bars above where the staff ends.
That's some Zappa stuff right there. Zappa had famously a drum audition piece of sheet music that, you know, if you were going to audition for the Zappa band, he would hand you this and say, like, go for it. And
it was impossible?
It was basically like the sheet. The piece of paper just looked black because it had so many little notations on it. I think only one drummer ever played it perfectly the first time. It was some jazz bow.
That's what happened to John Cage. In the late 80s, a British violin virtuoso managed to actually play the Freeman Etudes, which kind of, you know, defeats the purpose of them.
Yeah.
If somebody can actually play them.
He beat the 4-minute mile.
He's a superhero, basically.
And so what did it sound like?
I'm sure it's terrible. Yeah, it must have been, right? That not all Cage work is unlistenable gibberish. The Silence piece is very nice.
Yeah.
No, he does have pieces that kind of do have, you know, melody and, you know, have the listener in mind beyond just you're at a happening, check out this weird conceptual thing. But people just remember the weird conceptual stuff. And he would take it as far as he possibly could. A piece I'd never heard of until I was reading this last night, a composition called WGBH-TV, mm-hmm. named for the Boston public radio mm-hmm. station. It cannot be performed because it's not music. It's a series of correspondence, a series of letters to and from a Boston public TV station, in which they discuss whether or not he can put on a short television film to benefit the mentally disabled. So the sheet music to this piece is the correspondence about whether or not he can put on make a little documentary for the mentally disabled.
Now, do you think that there might be a time when a futureling has the ability to, not just the ability to, but our written language, handwriting becomes a playable score? Is there any precedent for that in our own?
Well, if John Cage can turn I Ching drawings and star charts into music.
Right. I mean, so it, like the music of the sphere, some kind of ancient ratios that we have found a way to find the music, and play the music.
Find suggests that the music is already there,
yes.
implicit in the orbits of the whirling spheres.
Which I think is partly what John Cage is saying. It's just the futurelings need to play their little like wings.
My guess is in reality, you could decode the movement of things in so many different ways. Mm-hmm. You know, you could choose which variables turn into pitch and which turn into tempo and which turn into timbre.
Right.
And it maybe doesn't mean any of them are actually, you know, if the Mona Lisa was played as a cantata or as a reggae song.
Right.
You know, is there one way to play the Mona Lisa as a reggae song?
If it was played on the tenor saxophone or on the harmonica.
But, you know, if there's one piece of John Cage music that our future listeners might be aware of, just on chronology, if nothing else, it would be his 1987 piece called Organ 2/ASLSP. ASLSP is meant to be an acronym for As Slow As Possible.
Oh.
And if you think about it, you'll realize that John Cage is not very good at acronyms. ASLSP? Is the L has to be from slow.
A.
So AS is either as or SL is slow.
Right.
The second S slow is the second S is the S in as?
No, that's a bad acronym.
It's not a great acronym. It's you see his problem. I mean, the real acronym of as slow as possible would be ASAP, which means the opposite of as slow as possible. And he couldn't just do ASLAP because that sounds like ass slap.
Yes.
Which...
Or a slap,
right.
But wait, I would think that the irony of having it be ASAP, as slow as possible, that would resonate. It does with me. I'm going to start saying that all the time. ASAP, as slow as possible.
He doesn't want to mislead the audience. I was noticing this about when they let movie audiences rate movies. Like, there's a thing called cinema's rating or cinema score or whatever, where they let audiences say, this is an A, this is a B, this is a C. And I was looking at the list of the worst rated movies, and it's all just audiences that felt misled.
Oh.
Like the trailer looked like a comedy, but then it's kind of a oddball family drama. Or the trailer looked like a horror movie, but instead it's a mood piece with no real scares.
I see.
That's the kind of movie where people are like, D-.
Uh-huh.
Whereas even a bad movie, people would be like, B, as long as it's more or less what they thought it was going to be. So right. Maybe John Cage just doesn't want to disappoint the concert hall that's like, this is going to be...
This said ASAP.
It's going to be so fast. So it's a fairly brief... I think it was written for piano, but it's later been performed for organ more often. And the first time it was played, although it's a fairly short piece, because the instruction to the musician says to play it as slow as possible,
mm-hmm.
ass slap. The first
isn't there an Italian way of saying that would sound more like
sure.
musically?
Lentissimo? What's slow? Lento, right?
Lento, but
so it would be lentissimo.
Uh-huh.
It would be present colon and sentence usual. The first performer played it at 29 minutes and 15 seconds. So pretty slow for a page or two of music.
Right.
He really had to try. But of course, you know, it's impossible to play something as slow as possible. It's like a kid trying to think of the highest number.
So did it become a race to the bottom?
An opposite race? Uh-huh. Have you ever heard the old, it's some kind of it's an old Persian story of the king who decides to leave his crown to one of his two children. And it's it's an Arab sheik or something. So they're breeding stallions, and it's whichever stallion crosses the finish line last, will inherit all the fortune. So the sons start out, and of course, they just inch along, you know, not never getting ahead of the other. The crowds leave. Everything dies. They realize this is not going to work. Have you heard this fable?
No, I like it so far.
Do you know what the sons do?
No, what do they do? Kill each other?
They're clever. No, they're smarter than that.
Oh, they put cocaine in the other horse's nose.
They switch horses. The kingdom goes to whichever son's horse crosses the finish line last. So they can just switch horses and have a normal race. It's like not having sex, not on cocaine.
So I'm still baffled. So what happens? They switch horses.
And now you want your horse to lose. So you better go as fast as you can on your brother's horse.
Oh, and it's a normal race.
It turns into a normal race. There was a loophole. The guy should have said, which of my sons crosses the finish line last?
Right.
But he says, the son whose horse crosses the finish line last. He just wasn't thinking. He was one of those round, ineffectual sultans like in Aladdin. And he was getting Jafar'd by one of his sons.
Right.
Anyway, why am I talking about that?
Because you
can keep going slower and slower.
Right.
Right. Just as you could on the horse.
So the first performance was 29 minutes.
And people soon realized, that's not as slow as possible. I could play this in 31 minutes or 42 minutes.
29 minutes and 1 second.
Audiences weren't crazy about it, but the piece would get played slower and slower in successive performances, really, theoretically, in tune with Cage's vision for the piece. And then, in 1997... a conference of musicians and philosophers decides they want something big to celebrate for the year 2000, a big cultural happening to celebrate the new millennium.
And nothing brings a crowd.
Like a very slow organ piece. Well, they realize that the year 2000 will be the 639th anniversary of the famous Blockwerk organ in Halberstadt, Germany. Apparently the Halberstadt Cathedral has this incredible organ that was like the first modern keyboard with our modern keyboard arrangement, like the 12-note claviature that we're used to today.
It is in Austria, is the 639th anniversary a significant
well,
one?
Well, in base 639, it's very important. I don't know. Is there anything good about 639? It's divisible by, it's 9 times 71,
I
guess.
You're pulling out some numerology now, I can see. Why don't we get some... Why don't we get some Torah interp here?
Some Kabbalah?
Yeah.
Well, 639, it turns out, is a very interesting number. It is the sum of the first 20 primes, as I'm sure you know.
Go on. The sum of the first 20 primes.
If you just add up 2 plus 3 plus 5 plus 7 plus 11 and so forth up to the 20th prime, I don't know what it is.
Did you not include 1? Is 1 not a prime number?
A prime should be divisible by both 1 and itself.
Right.
So it's a little tricky.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
You see the problem.
Yeah, I do.
It's both prime and not. It's Schrodinger's prime.
Right.
639 is also the area code for much of Saskatchewan.
Oh. If well, that helps. Now that is significant.
It's significant in the future
Saskatchewan is a warm beach community.
The Reginians have taken over Canada and hopefully sent all those Blue Jay fans packing.
Hey, now.
You're very concerned that I'm alienating Canada.
Well, no, I'm
not. With
my
war on the Blue Jays.
I was at first, but then it turned out I sent you a text to this effect when you were baiting all the Canadian baseball fans.
I was trolling the Blue Jays fans online.
We for that week were number 40 on the Canadian podcast charts.
Is that true?
Yeah. The Omnibus like leapt up the charts to, you know, within the top 50. So,
wait, are you saying a real thing? There are Canadian podcast charts and you know where we are on them?
Yes, yes.
Wow. Yeah. So Canadians do just love to be abused.
Yeah, the Canadians were like, we hate that Ken Jennings.
Let's see what he has to say.
Let's go on to the podcast app.
That's because they're not a country. They're an inferiority complex. I've actually thrown out a first pitch at a Toronto Blue Jays game. I feel like I have amazing Blue Jays cred.
Boy, I have no idea how many humble brags you can fit into insulting Canada, but you're very gifted at it.
So 639 is an arbitrary number. It's just the distance. It's just the time lag between the organ being invented, the modern keyboard being invented, and the year 2000.
Right.
And so their thought was, what if we played a musical composition for the next 639 years. Beginning in the year 2001, in the new millennium.
Whose idea is this? This does not sound like an idea. This sounds like a
drug trip.
It does. Like who? What if we just set something in motion? Perpetual piano machine.
Imagine a bunch of musicians and philosophers sitting around in their bean bags, being like, no, wait, it's like music, but it's super slow.
It's like one note.
Do you guys like Vanilla Fudge?
One note a season.
That's about what it is. So the discussion turns into, what piece would we play for 639 years? Oh, well, you know, instead of just playing, I've Been Working on the Railroad over and over.
that is an art piece.
Or Man in the Mirror by Michael Jackson. They think, right. what if he gets discredited sometime?
Right.
It has to be a musician who cannot be canceled.
What about the composer of I'll Be Working on the Railroad? What if some bad information comes out about that?
What if you find out he was actually in the kitchen with Dinah doing something untoward and Dinah did not consent?
I think that's him. I think doing something untoward is implied. I don't know about Dinah's consent.
Are you hashtagging me tooing the composer of I've Been Working on the Railroad?
I feel like Dinah. I feel like absent an accusation, I'm gonna reserve judgment.
You're gonna assume Dinah consents to whatever's happening.
I don't know if I'm gonna do that. I'm not saying that either.
It must be affirmative consent. And the very first cathedral organ was in the city of Halberstadt, and it just so happens there is kind of an old falling apart church called Saint Burkhardi.
You know, those are very popular in Germany.
Falling apart churches, yeah. Well, this one, it's all Napoleon's fault, so your mom will like this.
Yay!
One of the things that Napoleon did, apparently, did you know Napoleon had like a Billy Carter type younger brother named Jerome? Kind of a loser Roger Clinton type?
Didn't he make all of his like loser younger brothers like kings of Mexico?
That's exactly what happened. So he makes Jerome Bonaparte, the king of Westphalia.
Oh, and Jerome, where Volkswagens are made.
Exactly. Jerome is not an able leader. He deconsecrates a bunch of churches during his short and ignominious reign.
Right.
As the only king of Westphalia. And so for the next 190 years, between 1810 and the philosophers in the beanbags, St. Burkhardi Church in Halberstadt has been a barn. It's been a Cistercian monastery. It's been a distillery. It's been an East German pigsty. Mm. It has not been a church. So here's a place where they can install an organ in a church-like environment and just have it play for 639 years.
So it's a wrecked church, but it's intact enough that you could put an organ in there and it won't be full of pigs.
Right. People could visit. The East German pigs have been cleared away or have passed away, perhaps.
Got it. Dig it.
So on September 5th, 2001, which would have been John Cage's 89th birthday, the performance of As Slow as Possible begins. Unfortunately, it's a piece that begins with a rest. That's the first in the notation. So for the first 18 months, nothing happens. There's a bellows going on the organs. There's kind of a low whoosh of a bellows, but no music per se.
Right. This is the rest.
Yes. But the neighbors are into that because at least it's quiet. When the first chord begins sounding in February 2003, 18 months later, they basically put sandbags on the pedals. So they stay permanently depressed. Organists don't have to switch off in 8-hour shifts. You've got a bunch of sandbags playing the music. And the first chord is played in February 2003. It's a G sharp, a B, and a higher G sharp, whatever that is. And the neighbors start to complain because now it's loud. And it doesn't stop. And it's not going to stop until the following July. 14 months later, a few other notes are going to be added.
One chord.
A single chord. Two E's are going to be added 18 months later. But for 18 months, it's just going to be G sharp, B, G sharp.
Can you imagine if you lived for 18 months next to an organ playing 24 hours a day and then it added two E's? You'd be like, the sun has come out.
They actually had to install kind of a plexiglass box around the organ.
Okay.
So that people could see the performance taking place. You don't want to block the sight lines. You don't want obstructed view seats, but so that the neighbors would have the sound somewhat dulled.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
So this is a very weird take on the biosphere, or on, on like a salt mine sort of repository seed bank.
Because it's art, but it's on a geological timescale.
And we're counting on people 100 years from now thinking this is just as funny that they're going to keep this plugged in. Right? It's going to require some maintenance. Those sandbags are going to deteriorate.
Somebody's going to have to refill sandbags.
Yep.
Somebody's got to plug in the bellows.
That organ's not going to run 600 years without a little maintenance.
Well, that's the problem. How do you make sure this thing actually goes for 639 years? It's an act of faith. One of the things they've done is that they have solicited donations. The organ's got to be in good shape because some of these notes are going to play for a long time. There's at one point coming up in the score, just in the next few decades, where one note is going to have to be sounded and then play for 58 years straight.
Right.
And organs may not be built for that.
Right.
So what they've done is they've solicited donations. For £1,000, £1,000 British, you can donate 1 year of sound to the organ. That's about the cost they figure of maintenance and everything for a full year. So you can provide a year of this John Cage work for the low, low cost of £1,000, and you get your name on a plaque in St. Bacardi.
Along with 639 other dupes.
Well, sure.
But some of those years, now, some of those years are going to get divided up into 15-minute increments, and you're going to have a lot of extra names on that church wall.
And you're going to be able to pick your favorite part. Like, if you want to be in the chorus,
right.
You don't want to be in a 15-year rest. You don't want to be that to be your
Well,
year.
I don't know.
The neighbors probably would like
Maybe
it.
Maybe the rests are at a bargain.
It's turned out to be a pretty big hit, actually. In January 2006, the first new chord was played, the second new chord of the piece. It's an F sharp diminished, and it was going to play for 2.5 years. So as if you're a tourist, you could come anytime.
You're right.
But of course, people want to be there on the 5th of the month at exactly 3:33 in the afternoon. You'd think it would be 4:33. I don't know why it's 3:33, but, to see the changeover. So it's become a big cultural event where thousands of avant-garde music fans and other looky-loos come to Saxony to be in the church when the new chord plays.
So it's just a transition to a new chord.
Yes, there's nothing, the sandbags are moved.
Because it's happening so slowly, you're never going to, in the space of one day, see two movements. Even if it was a 30-second note in the score, it would still take weeks to unfold.
Do you think it loses something aesthetically because no one can follow the train of the piece?
No.
It's very difficult for an audience to follow the mood, right?
Yeah, I think aesthetically it is. I think that this idea works as well on paper as it does in life.
Which is not at all.
Well, I mean, it's something that you are glad people do.
The last change happened on October 5th, 2013. We were recording this in the middle of 2019. So there has not been a change to the organ in 6 years. The next chord change is due on September 5th, 2020. So that chord will have played for 7 years.
And it's a full chord, and it's just there in
it's
this
just
room
going
just humming.
24/7.
Wow.
So maybe there is kind of an experience to, not going there, not for 639 years. You'd have stuff to do and your mail would pile up.
But when have you ever sat in a room and listened to an organ chord for an hour even?
Right.
That would be heavy stuff.
If you think church is boring, check this out.
Now, are you allowed to bring an instrument into the church and riff on the chord?
That's a great question.
Because with that chord just droning, you could get in there and start soloing over it. Or just have, put a little jazz combo together and start based on that chord, record a whole new piece of music.
I want to say for a big enough donation, they would let you do that, but maybe that would be against the idea is that if you were to speed this whole thing up, you would get a performance of.
Oh, wait, are they recording it? That's another great question. And if so, onto what media?
Do you think they've got the gold records like all lined up?
Because if they're recording it with the intention, if the end of the gag, if the big reveal is that they then play the recording and everybody sits around and like says, oh, they actually that should have gone an extra 2 weeks.
They released it on one of those KTEL boxed sets, like, you know, where it lists the hits, scroll up the all your favorite hits. Year one, year two, but year three.
I wonder like how a sound wave, you know, a sound wave is kind of a fractal thing. Like if you zoom in on it, you see all this extra detail. And if you zoom out on it, you know, other waves kind of appear. I wonder if you took a sound wave and looked at it and then compressed it from 639 years to like does, 6 minutes.
Does it sound like the Chipmunks?
Well, or
Christmas, Christmas.
No, I wonder if you do it where you keep the pitch,
right.
I wonder what that,
it's a whole new instrument.
The thickness of that tone would
be. What if it's
be?
Just an awful instrument? What if it just turns into the harmonica or something?
The harmonica is a great instrument. I'll fight you.
This is all academic for our listeners. This all finished up to you on September 5th, 2640, we hope. Mm-hmm. Perhaps you remember there was a halftime interval in the year 2319. You got to have an intermission for a performance this long.
Of course.
So for several months in 2319, there was a bathroom break. But it was essentially a slow food idea. When they asked the organizers, why are you doing this? They said, we want to rediscover calm and slowness in today's fast changing world.
And such a lame thing to say.
It kind of is.
They should have said, we're being weird. Isn't this weird? We're trying to put weird stuff back into modern life.
I just like that it's an act of faith. You know, it's almost like planting a tree or something. You're assuming that right. The world is still going to be, when I was in Oslo over the summer, they're building a new library. And one of the things the library is going to have is every year they're having a different world-class author, your Margaret Atwood, your J.M. Coetzee, write a new book. And they've also planted a pine forest outside the city, 50 miles. And in 100 years,
such a Norwegian thing.
In 100 years, the forest will have reached the height it can be harvested at, and they will use those trees to create the wood pulp to create new books, and they will finally print after 100 years all those stories that were written. So it's like a seed bank for literature. But right now, when the library is completed, you will be able to go in and see all these books sitting on the shelf.
Unpublished, unread.
Unread by anyone. You can just see them tantalizing you, an unpublished Margaret Atwood novel. And yet the forest on which they will eventually be printed is still a sapling 50 miles out of town. And the idea is, just to create some sense of continuity. Think about the generation to come. You know, have the hope that someday the pines will be tall enough, the books will be printed, the organ will finally come to a silent halt.
I mean, there's a lot about modern art that's infuriating. But that idea is really appealing. I really do think that is great art.
I like just the scale of it. So we've been talking about this piece for, I don't know, 40 minutes or so. So if you were to take, so while we've been talking for 40 minutes, some time has elapsed in ASLSP, right?
Right.
If you were to collapse that down, you know, there are about 8.4 million of those 40 minute increments involved in this 639 year performance. So it would be like if you take a 3 or 4 minute pop song, if you take I Can't Get No Satisfaction, that would basically be like, we have just heard the equivalent of 1/40,000th of a second of I Can't Get No Satisfaction while we were talking. That was the 40 minutes we've been talking about this piece as it played over in Germany. It's the equivalent of 1/40,000th of a second of a pop song. That's just how fast our little lives wish by.
Right.
Onward toward the grave. Do you find that depressing?
No, I find that meaningless. because that amount of scale.
You can't even think about it?
Well, you can, but I mean, we're talking about the scale of forests now.
Yeah.
And I think the most effective way to consider the time scale of forests is by apprising a forest, right? A tree speaks for itself. And I don't need a metaphor for how majestic a 600 year forest is.
It's just like the ants, right?
Yeah.
If they were
sexy AF.
If they would just stop having sap dreams about their ant wives and just enjoy their slow life.
And that concludes As Slow As Possible, entry 075.2P0308, certificate number 24524, in the omnibus. Futurelings, in the unlikely event that social media still exists in your era, Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram are all only halfway through their 639-year song, and you can find ours at Omnibus Project. You can find Ken's jokes, which will
infuriate Canadians,
but which are timeless, and 700 years from now,
no comedy is timeless.
You sentient wheat chaff will raise your little tendrils in hilarity at Ken Jennings, and I am grumpy and surreal in the middle of the night over at John Roderick. You can go to my Instagram account and see all of my 1-minute videos of
you wandering the streets of your neighborhood with a blunderbuss.
That's right. I'm also at John Roderick there. You can go to our, you can email us at theomnibusproject@gmail.com. You can go to Reddit if you are a Redditor at,
To catch a Redditor.
They've been yelling at me over on Reddit that I don't say which Reddit. There are two Reddits.
And you're supposed to endorse one?
Well, so
it's tricky.
One of the Reddits has more people on it than the other.
Has there been a schism?
And so the people that are on the Reddit that have more people believe that they have a better claim. Or they took the other as just as fair. Let's see.
Synod are we?
And so they're saying that I should not say all the Reddits, nor should I get the Reddits wrong. I should say the one Reddit, and I should say it properly. So there are two Reddits. One is Reddit/Omnibus Project, which only has 73 members, and one is Omnibus_Futurelings, which has 167 members. So I'm hoping that...
I feel like for 167 people, like 10 times that have tuned out while you've been describing the problem.
No. I would say more like 100 times more people have tuned out. Anyway, so go to Omnibus_Futurelings and begin your inevitable Redditor assault on Omnibus Project. Also, on Facebook, there is a uncomplicated community of people called the Futurelings. Uncomplicated, by which I mean there's not a competing group
yet,
but the Futurelings are very complicated because it's a group of human beings all in a space. But they are the Futurelings on Facebook.
Go watch their Brownie in Motion.
You can also send us packages at P.O. Box 55744 Shoreline, Washington 98155.
I just picked up some mail. I've been looking at the mail right now.
Also, I should say...
Here's a person that wanted to donate to our Patreon, but he wanted to do a one-time donation only, so he just sent us cash in the U.S. mail.
Oh, how many dollars?
He just sent us four $20 bills.
Oh, two $20 bills each.
That's great, Tim.
Well, thank you, Tim.
Do you really think this is going to be 50-50?
Yeah, I'm going to take at least 40 of those dollars, maybe 60.
And a bunch of pictures of him also.
Tim!
Here, I'll take the money. You can keep this collage of Tim's vacation photos.
We'll put the collage up on the wall. I do want to say, Ken and I have recently undergone a transition to an independent podcast, and we were extremely nervous about it.
We really did not know if Omnibus was a going concern anymore, which hurt us.
Yeah, it did. We were anxious, and we were honestly at each other's throats. Boy, if we had a transcript of the text messages we sent back and forth to one another, where one or the other of us said, "That's not what I'm saying."
You could light Seattle for a year.
I'm on vacation right now.
On the hassled energy in our texts.
Anyway, we started a Patreon, which is... which is the Omnibus Project. It's patreon.com/omnibusproject, right?
That's correct.
Anyway, the response we've gotten from you, the listeners, the Futurelings, has been overwhelming, and we're so grateful to you. It's
really touching that people enjoy the show.
It is touching, and it's helped us. It really has, that the contributions you've made to keep the show a going concern. So
it very much is now.
Yeah, thank you so much, and it was it's been very affirming.
If you would like to join the effort and feel like a part of the supportive Omnibus community, the show is still free for all.
That's right.
But to show your support,
and it's a free for all.
It really is. But you can like our texts, like an ant orgy. Mm. But you can show your support in a financial way if you're so inclined at patreon.com/omnibusproject. Look what I just opened in the mail. You mentioned going to McDonald's, John.
Yeah.
So this person sent you his very very detailed zine he has made, ranking every burger establishment in Seattle.
Whoa! It's called The Big Burger Guys.
It's huge. It's like, it's 42 pages of burger rankings, like Consumer Report style with charts.
I didn't know there were that many burger places in Seattle.
And it's really places that are just burger places. It's not, get the burger at this hotel bar or whatever. It's all kind of fast foody style.
Just places that say burger in the title.
Right.
Well, we have considered, to those of you who are contributing to the Patreon, that one of the potential bonus media might be that we open viewer mail and discuss it at length in a separate donor-only feed.
This would be the kind of amazing content that would be rolled out for donors at that tier.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we would take a fresher take on it than just talking about what Ken is finding in the mail. I noticed that the my half of those $20 bills hasn't migrated over to my side of the table. Where did they just? They just went right in your pocket.
You can have the collage.
Ugh, you're the worst.
I'm not going to reveal what the best burger in Seattle is, but I will tell you I ate there a week and a half ago, and it was delightful.
Was it slow enough for you? Fancy pants?
It was actually kind of slow as fast food goes. It was slow fast food.
Anyway, I'm done doing the end part of the outro.
And I'm just reading about how Shake Shack ranked in optics, synergy, and bun quality. Listeners, from our vantage point in your distant past, we have no idea how long our civilization survived. We were too busy ranking bun quality to even worry about deforestation and giant meteors and so forth. We hope and pray that the catastrophe we fear may never come, that the lava flows in particular spare the church in central southern Germany, where the John Cage piece is being played very slowly right now. Let's check in and see how it sounds right now. That's pretty good. I wish we were there. If the worst comes soon, however, this recording, like all our recordings, may be our final word to you. But if Providence allows, if we and the organ survive, we hope to be back with you soon for another entry in the Omnibus.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.